Yeah. Hopefully there'll be something new here. Right. So the basic problem, which we probably already know, is that observe it outside of a black hole's Hawking radiation. So a black hole has a temperature. And if you plug that temperature into the classical laws of black hole mechanics, about an entropy, which is proportional to the area. So this might seem somewhat surprising. Normally you have areas scaled like volume, so this seems like a very strange property of black holes. In fact, it's not specific to black holes, though. In fact, you have a similar thermodynamic analysis for cosmological horizons. So for example, in De Sitter space, you have an expansion, and so you have a horizon just due to the fact that there are some parts of space-time that are accelerating away from you fast enough that you can never see them. And you can also reproduce a similar thing in and an observer in an expanding space will also have a temperature. And so they'll assign some entropy to their horizon. Similarly, you can get an effect in flat space, which is the inner effect, which is if you have a flat space and you just accelerate, you'll see a temperature. And you'll also have a horizon if you're accelerating. So the observers in a classical spacetime seem to, whenever they have a horizon, they seem to have a temperature. And so there's a suggestion that this entropy maybe is not some specific property of black holes, but is actually universal. The general property of cosmic horizons. So the question that we haven't really had to answer is, what's the statistical reason for having an entropy for when you have a horizon? To answer this question, it's useful to introduce the concept of entanglement. So the idea is we have a bipartite system, we have a state in a tensor product space. Not every state can be written as a product. Those that can are called separable, and those which can't are called entangled. And when you have this case, what you can do is you can construct a state which applies only to one of your subsystems. But so in the case where you have this product state, that's just psi A. But in general, there is no nice product decomposition. And you have to take the partial trace, which gives you a mixed state, rho sub A. So in general, that will have some entropy. Which is just given by the usual formula for entropy of the density matrix. And so what entanglement tells us is that you can have a total system with no entropy in it, and yet a subsystem can't have an entropy. So that's sort of the key point. Right. So this is just sort of a mathematical background, but I'm going to use this later in computing entanglement entropy. So when you have a state, you can't write it as a product state.
So can you interject for
sure, of course.
Is that generically true for different measures of entropy?
Yes. So
this is the last point.
Do you have any particular measure that have entropy in mind?
No.
Okay.
But I know that there exists other measures of entropy.
Okay. So what will happen? I can answer that
better probably in the next slide. But keep that question in mind because I might forget to answer it. So in general, you can't write your state as a product state, but you can do the next best thing. Which you can do is you can take an orthonormal set of states in each of your spaces. And you can write your state in this nice sort of diagonal form with these additional set of coefficients, which are called the Schmidt coefficients. And the number of terms is the Schmidt rank. So when the Schmidt rank is just one, when there's only one term in this sum, that's when you have an unentangled state. But in general, if you have a positive Schmidt rank, you'll have a positive entropy. Right. So the And the way we can see this is if you take the Schmidt decomposition, it's really easy to go to the partial trace. Is this line clear to everybody what you do here? Maybe I should go through and explain this. What you do is you take this state, right, and you turn it into a density matrix. So you take the ket and then the bra, right? And so you have this, and in that form, when you take the partial trace, you want to take the inner product with a basis of B. And so you choose this particular basis, and these just drop out. And so the lambda becomes squared, the square root of lambda gets squared. And so you see that the reduced density matrix that you get has this really simple form in terms of the Schmidt coefficients. And so right away, you can just compute the entanglement entropy in terms of the Schmidt coefficients, and it's symmetric. So these two density matrices have exactly the same eigenvalues with the same multiplicities, or rather, the same non-zero eigenvalues. One of them, if one Hilbert space is bigger, it'll have some extra zeros. So to answer your question about measures of entanglement, of different measures of entropy, any measure of entropy will tend to be zero when you have just a probability distribution that's just one and then a bunch of zeros, right? So in that case, it will be zero on any pure state, but it'll be positive whenever you have more than one Schmidt coefficient, so whenever you have an entangled state. Right, so the idea is to apply this to something like a quantum field theory. So in a quantum field theory, your states are functionals on field configurations. So there's something that if you have a field configuration on space, it'll give you a complex amplitude. Now, what this means is that each region of space you can view as a subsystem. So for example, if you have a horizon, you'll only be able to receive light signals from this region omega. There'll be some other region, the complement of omega, which you can't get any signals from. So what you'll see is not the totality of the state. What you'll see is only part of the state. And necessarily, that means you have to trace out over these additional degrees of freedom, which you can't see. And you'll necessarily have you'll have a mixed state. You'll see some entropy. And so the proposal, which was originally, I think, proposed by Raphael Sorkin, but it's in a paper that's quite hard to find. This one is slightly easier to find and explains a lot of the same things. The idea, anyhow, is that black hole entropy is the same thing as entanglement entropy. The reason why an observer with a horizon sees an entropy is just because they don't have access to what's beyond the horizon. And there's a specific quantum entropy associated with that. So that shouldn't be enough to convince you, but maybe this is. There's some interesting results about this entropy. In particular, you can derive a generalized second law for it. So under the assumption that the exterior of the black hole evolves independently of the interior, which is something that we would expect, basically by definition of a horizon, that then the entropy must increase. The total entropy on the exterior must increase, which is the sum of the entanglement entropy plus whatever ordinary entropy you have outside. So second, we know that it scales like the horizon area. So what people have done models where you look at quantum field theory on a lattice and the ground state, and you trace over some set of lattice points inside an imaginary sphere, and you find an entropy that grows with the area divided by the square of the lattice spacing. So we already can see this area scaling behavior. The problem is, it's infinite as you take away that regularization. And so the hope is that perhaps something like quantum gravity could put in the required, the UV cutoff that you need to get something finite and matching the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So before I dive into loop quantum gravity, are there any questions? Or is that all totally clear? Or am I going fast? Or? OK, great. Right, so in loop quantum gravity, the geometry of space is described by spin network states. So they're labeled by these spin networks, which Isabeau talked about yesterday. They show that space has a discrete structure at short distances. So you can expect that there'll be something like a UV cutoff, which will give you a finite entropy. And finally, they have a good definition of area. So if you want to compute entropy and compare it to area, you can actually do that. And the area of a surface. So you have some spin network embedded in your space, and you have some additional surface embedded in your space. That'll it'll cut the spin network at a set of edges, and you just take a sum of all the places where it cuts the spin network with a particular factor of this spin, which is associated to that edge. So the plan of what I'm going to do is I'm going to compute the entanglement entropy of the spin network states using the Schmidt decomposition. The way you usually do it is that you do consider some embedding of the spin network into a manifold and some surface in that manifold. But then what you show is that it's independent of any particular embedding you would choose. All it depends on is, you can already see this formula doesn't depend on any particular embedding. It only depends on the relation between the spin network and the surface. And I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to assume some embedding, but really the embedding is irrelevant. You just get a formula like this that doesn't depend on it. Right. So in loop quantum gravity, like in quantum field theory, states are functionals of a connection. They're functionals on the space of states. In this case, the field configurations are SU2 connections. Right. So in order to define that Hilbert space, I'm going to give you a basis, which is the link states. So a link state depends on a curve gamma, a representation of the group, and two matrix elements in that representation, so two indices from 1 up to 2j plus 1. And so the way it assigns to a particular connection a complex number is that you start with the holonomy along that curve gamma. You put it into the spin j representation, which gives you 2j plus 1 by 2j plus 1 unitary matrix. And then to get a complex number out of that, you just extract one of the matrix elements. So you have this formula right here. And what's useful about those is that they're orthogonal and normalized. So they form a good basis of the space you're interested in. And also, they have a very, it's very easy to compute the Schmidt decomposition of one of these things. So suppose you have some a link state corresponding to a curved gamma, which crosses the boundary of the which crosses your horizon. So this one part of the curve is outside the horizon, and this part is inside. So what you can do is you can just break the curve into two pieces, the part inside and the part outside. What you find is that the holonomy along this entire curve, which is u here, just factors as the product of the holonomies along the two smaller curves. And you can just expand using matrix ordinary matrix multiplication. So the AB matrix element of the whole curve holonomy in this representation is just the sum of matrix elements of the you sum over the one repeated index. And this is exactly a Schmidt decomposition. So as you change C, this runs over, this set of states form an orthogonal set. These set of states also form an orthogonal set. And yes?
Can you
repeat that? Oh, a holonomy, yeah, sure. So that's this thing. So basically, what a connection is, it's a way of parallel transporting around all the curves in your manifold. And so if you have a group connection, it just assigns to every curve a group element. And so this is the assignment of, this is just saying which group element does this connection assign to this curve.
The picture would be helpful
for I do have, I don't know a good picture to explain this.
So,
You
can think of it, the group element, let's say, for example, if you take the rotations group, that's probably the easiest thing. So if you have a sphere, for example, and you transport a vector along one path, when you come back to the original point, your vector will be rotated. And the group element, which is the holonomy by which you will be rotated, is the group element, the rotation by which you rotate. Having been along that path.
That's the group element on the tangent.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the holonomy. It's basically that group element that tells you how much it's rotating.
Okay. Thank
you. Right. So we have a Schmidt decomposition, and the Schmidt ramp is just 2k plus one, and all the Schmidt coefficients are the same. So it's this is a really simple case, but what we'll see is that it generalizes. Right. So the link states are useful, but they're not particularly interesting as states because they're not gauge pairing. So if you perform a gauge transformation, what you find is that you pick up a factor of the group at the start of the curve, that's the end of the curve and the start of the curve. So the way to solve this is with Wilson loops. So rather than taking a matrix element, you take a trace of this matrix. So you just take the sum of the diagonal elements and normalize that, so it gives you a good state, a normalized state. And in order to do that, you have to take a closed curve so that these two group elements are the same, and then you just kind of cancel them. Right, so the Schmidt decomposition of the Wilson loop just follows from taking the Schmidt decomposition of the link state twice. So if you start with a Wilson loop that crosses your horizon, all you need to do is take this decomposition dimension and apply it at the two points where the curve crosses. And you get this formula. Now, once again, that's just a Schmidt decomposition. But now the Schmidt rank, because you plug the decomposition twice, you get a rank of 2j plus 1 squared. And from that, you can compute what the integument entropy is. So the entropy is just you take this set of coefficients, and you square them, and you compute the usual entropy for that. And you find that's just twice the log of 2j plus 1. So it's not hard to see how this is going to generalize to a Wilson loop that intersects more times. So if you have n intersections, here I've drawn 4, you just apply the identity at every point where it crosses the horizon. And you get this, you have to take your curves on one side and group them all together, and on the other side, group those. So, sorry, these are the ones in omega over here. So those are the complement. And what you find is that this is just, once again, a Schmidt decomposition, but the Schmidt rank is 2j plus 1 to the n, and the entropy scales up with n. So what's interesting about this is that the entropy counts intersections of the Wilson loop with the surface. So if you call the area operator, it's also dependent on the number of intersections.
So this is the entropy of what?
So
entanglement entropy between, I'm just trying to get a physical picture.
Yeah, for sure. So the spin network defines the state
of the field of your field, the state of your connection. Maybe it's tough to get a picture because there's no classical analog of entanglement. But what it means is that if you, essentially it measures the degree of correlation between the field on inside and the, on one side of the horizon and the field on the other side. So the entropy happens when you, if you were to...
Because like, this is dependent just on the path that you take, right?
Yeah, it's dependent on the path and the spin. So if you think of this thing as representing space, there's some if you
ignore the correlations that are generated by this Wilson loop of the connection, then you find that that you're no longer in a well-defined state. You have to describe your subsystem by an ensemble. Is that okay?
Outside and inside of the black hole.
I guess.
Yeah, but that can't be right though, because it's dependent on the path that you take.
It's dependent on the state of the field.
This is the spin network. It's depending on the spin network.
Oh. So it does depend on this thing encodes the geometry of space. So all of that means is that
it's not a space sine curve. It's not a
You see this thing as a spin network. The holonomy, the Wilson loop there is a spin network.
Right. Then sigma is, or no, omega is.
Omega is the part of the piece of space that's outside the horizon. So you only have access to, so everything beyond here is inside the black hole, right? Everything on the ground.
I think
the
better way to say it's just any closed surface.
Right. It can be any closed surface, but. I ideally love to apply it to a horizon. It makes no sense to me.
I guess there's nothing only specific for black holes.
That's right.
I understand.
Yes?
So you have this link space, which is just like the network of the form like this. And then you go to the Wilson loop state.
Yeah.
And then you take it 2j plus 1 time. That kind of stuff can then fix just C again.
So this part?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And for all the different spins?
So all of the A's are, so what these things are is their matrix elements.
What are the link states then?
So the link state is this thing. And so gamma and J. Gamma and J label the curve. So gamma is the choice of curve.
Mm-hmm.
J is a label that you attach to the curve. But then A and B, once you fix those, A and B are the matrix elements of that matrix which you construct for each curve.
Oh, you mean the group thing?
Yeah, right. So, button. Yeah. So,
you can attach a label and it depends on the label.
Yes, right. And so, A and B are labeled the matrix elements, and so what you can so when you take the trace of the matrix, that's just the sum of the diagonal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this formula is. So the A matrix element summed over all A.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the usual formula. The trace of the matrix is just the sum of the diagonal. And what's the reason you take the trace is that it doesn't depend on which faces you choose.
Okay. So staging
there. Right. Whereas the matrix elements do depend on your choice of faces. Okay. So I think I was there. So the it is that the entanglement entropy counts the number of intersections of the curve with the boundary. So it's very it's a lot like the area operator. Hmm?
That's that was a good comment.
Thank you. So
So the Wilson loops aren't the, right, so that's, a Wilson loop is not the only way to generate a gauge invariant state. So there are also spin network states. So in the Wilson loop, the way we cured the problem of having of this gauge dependence was by taking two endpoints of the same curve and having them meet at the same point, because the group elements could then cancel out. So in there's a more general way of doing that. You can have multiple curves all meet at one point. So you could have an arbitrary number meet at some node, which I'm going to call n. And so what you need in order to be able to assign some amplitude which doesn't depend on the gauge is an intertwiner, which is a map that is invariant under the action of the group. So it's it takes the representation spaces of all these representations into the complex numbers in a group invariant way. And so what this gives you is the spin network states. So this is sort of a heuristic formula, but basically all it means is that you take all the intertwiners assigned to all the nodes. So you start with some graph. You assign an intertwiner to every node. You take the product of all of those, and that will have some set of indices, of which there'll be one for every endpoint of every curve. And then you take the product of all the link states, which will also have a set of indices, which are one for every endpoint of every curve. And then you just contract them together. So a spin network really is just this superposition of link states, of products of link states. And we can take a string decomposition in a similar way. And without getting into the technicals of it, really you just take that same identity, the Schmidt decomposition for a link state, you apply it every point where an edge crosses the boundary, and you get this Schmidt decomposition, whose Schmidt rank is given by the product of the dimensions of all the representations. And the technical part is showing that this state which you define, which is a state on the on omega, that this whole class of states form an orthonormal basis. But once you have this result, the entanglement entropy follows really easily, and it's just a sum over every place where a curve intersects a boundary with a factor of log of 2j plus 1. So the key point is that entropy is an extensive quantity. You can compute it by looking at each individual part of the boundary and then summing them all up. But it depends only on the boundary. It has nothing to do with the volume of either space, of omega or its complement. Right. So the other thing that we can do with the Schmidt decomposition is we can compute the reduced density matrix corresponding to a region. And when you do that, you get this thing, but what does that mean? Well, it's really just the same as, it's really just the spin network restricted to that set, to that part of space. The difference is, there's no way it can be a pure spin network, because there's it's easy to see that a pure spin network state can't have any endpoints. And the reason that is you'd have to have a group invariant map from a representation of that group into the complex numbers. So essentially, you'd have to pick some vector in an n-dimensional space which is invariant under all unitary transformations. But what you can do, so you can't do that with a pure state, but if you allow yourself to choose a mixed state, you can find a mixed state which commutes with all unitary transformations. It's the maximally mixed state. And so essentially what you do is you take your original spin network, but to tie up all these ends, you sort of add a maximally mixed state. But every time you do that, you gain an entropy of log 2j plus 1. So it's a fairly simple picture of where the entropy comes from. How am I for time? OK. So I'm going to talk briefly about the relation to the isolated horizons program. So we've seen that the entanglement entropy depends only on the boundary. So the question is, can we describe it using some theory which lives entirely on the boundary? Yeah.
So it means that the entanglement entropy is yes, so you have the you're on the right field to have an entanglement.
Yes. It should have been. Yeah, no, that's a good point, and I'm going to talk about that in my outlook because I don't have a full answer to that question, but I have an idea of what I think an answer should look like. Right. So, can we describe it using a theory? Can we describe this entropy using some theory which lives just on the boundary? And so it turns out that this has already been done. So in the isolated horizon framework, the idea there is rather than doing loop quantum gravity on a whole surface, on your whole surface, omega and omega's complement, you just restrict yourself to the outside of the horizon, and you add, you sort of supplement that theory with fields that live just on the just live on the horizon. And so what you find is when you quantize, you get a boundary term, which is just a Chern-Simons term. And then you impose particular boundary conditions, which are called the isolated horizon boundary conditions. Their details aren't important to this argument. But what they do is they break up the in general, you have a Hilbert space of the usual loop quantum gravity Hilbert space in omega, and you have a Chern-Simons Hilbert space on the boundary. But what the boundary conditions do is they break it up in this way. And essentially, all this means is that you have spin networks that end on the boundary. But where they end, there's a singularity. So there's a conical singularity, and so there's a non-trivial there's a deficit angle around those points. So the Hilbert space is divided this way. And so the way they compute the entropy is they ignore everything on the interior and look just at the state of the boundary. So you trace over this stuff, and you get a state over here that lives on the boundary. What they find is that they get a maximally mixed density matrix on this subspace here. And using Chern-Simons theory, they can compute the dimension. So what they call the entropy is just the logarithm of that dimension. So the isolated horizon entropy is the logarithm of the dimension of this space. And what they found is that it's just the same formula which I had before. It's the sum of the log of the dimensions of all the representations. So it matches the entanglement entropy. So we can see that our result has come up in a completely different context of Chern-Simons theory. And so the question is, why would these things agree? Right. So it's not too hard to see why using the symmetry properties of the entanglement entropy. So suppose you wanted to construct such a generic sort of boundary theory. Well, the first thing that you'd want is that for any state is that you don't want it to affect the physics on omega in the bulk. So for every state that you could consider of the exterior geometry of the total geometry of space, there should be some geometry in your truncated space of exterior plus boundary, which agrees on the outside. So to an observer outside, they'd never be able to tell the difference whether their physics was being described by, this would be if it were described by all of loop quantum gravity or if it were described by loop quantum gravity plus an isolated horizon. And now just using that requirement, you can figure out the state of the boundary will just be the partial trace over the, just as we defined it before, the partial trace over the bulk, giving a state on the boundary. And now, using, now if you recall from the Schmidt decomposition, if you have a pure state and you have the two partial traces of the state, they have the same spectrum. So we know that this spectrum of the boundary state is the same as the mixed spin network state, which I defined before, which is what happens when you trace out a spin network. So this density matrix has 2j plus 1, has a rank of 2j plus 1. It has 2j plus 1, product of 2j plus 1 over all the punctures is the number of non-zero coefficients it has. So in particular, it's a maximally mixed state on a particular subspace. And the logarithm of the dimension of that subspace must be the entangled potential. So essentially what we've shown is that while you can you can come up with these results using all the sort of machinery of a Trunk-Simons theory, it's just the same as the entanglement entropy. So the entanglement entropy in one higher dimension is the same as the logarithm of the dimension of this boundary Hilbert space which you construct. Right. Yeah, this is quite generic. And in fact, the isolated horizon boundary conditions aren't the only ones that have been considered. There's an earlier paper by Lee Smolin where he has a different choice of boundary conditions, and the dimension that he gets is the same. So this result was
the same there, even though he has a different type of Trunk-Simons theory and a different set of boundary conditions. So really what this shows is that this result is just generic, and it's not a particular value of that there's a certain match between the spin network theory and the Trunk-Simons theory. All right, so just to sum up, the black hole entropy has a rather natural explanation as an entanglement entropy. So in particular, it's universal. It should apply to arbitrary horizons. You don't have to make any particular choice of black hole solutions, right, like that, or boundary conditions. It's extensive, so if you can compute it as a sum over all the places where the spin network punctures the boundary. And finally, it's holographic, so you can compute it from a lower dimensional theory as well, and the two results agree. So here's the but. It's not proportional to here. So this is the formula. This is what Peter both pointed out a few slides ago. These formulas are different. They're both, they obviously have something in common, right, which is that there are sum over punctures of something dependent on the spins, but the functions here are different. So, yeah.
So you've derived this entanglement entropy in general with quantum gravity.
Yes.
But the Beckmann-Hoffman formula is only valid in a single possible limit. So, in general, it will have sublinear corrections. But if you imagine that you're not in some sense, like you have a small black hole or something, those sublinear corrections will become important. So, what I'm saying is that maybe if you look in the right limit, these formulas might look a lot more similar.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly
what you need to do. So here's my proposal, and maybe you can tell me if what you're thinking of is different from this. So maybe we could have expected all along that you're not going to get entropy proportional to area dead on, because that's not the case for that is just a specific sort of limiting case. In general, if you have higher order terms in your, even at the level of classical GR, if you have higher order terms in your Lagrangian, then you have black hole entropy. Your black hole entropy changes as well. But it always has this extensive form. So it is always an integral over the horizon of this more general quantity Q, which is a Euler charge. So when So this is the result of Wald, which Matthias already mentioned yesterday. So if we want to make some kind of connection to this result, so first of all, we have an extensive quantity. So we could think that perhaps our formula, this log of 2j plus 1, is just this thing in disguise, just like the area is a classical quantity, but also has this this formula in terms of spin networks. So the question is, can we work backwards? So is there some quantity q such that when you take that and treat it as an operator in the usual way you do in loop quantum gravity and apply that to a spin network state, it just gives you the entropy? So does this formula that we have correspond to some geometric quantity? And so the hope is, if we know Q depends on the Lagrangian, and so potentially you could start deriving something like quantum corrections to gravity just from black hole thermodynamics. So that's everything. Thank you. You don't have to read all of these, but if you think this idea about entanglement entropy and black holes is interesting, or if you think it's complete nonsense, and you want to hear some people argue against it, then I really recommend this reference. So it's just it's just sort of a transcript of a discussion between three people who are way smarter than me and can explain things much better than I can, with three different points of view on what black hole entropy is. So Ted Jacobson is arguing the point of view which I've been arguing here, which is that black hole entropy has something to do with entanglement. Donald Merle is arguing the point of view from string theory that the entropy is something like all the possible internal states of the black hole, but that there has to be some kind of holographic principle to limit what those are. And then Carlo Rovelli is arguing the point of view, which is usually used in loop quantum gravity, that black hole entropy is something about the fluctuations of the geometry of the horizon. So it's a very accessible sort of thing, and everything else here is a bit more technical. Okay.
So maybe it was like, because it seems to me that the Bekesian-Hawking formula is derived from actual classical black hole, and then you do some semi-classical calculation to procure that out of that. So, look at quantum corrections or something. So, shouldn't you, I'm just wondering if your formula would make more sense if you had like some sort of effective classical, something like in loop quantum gravity that looked like a big black hole is classical, and then you compare the formula that you would get from applying the area operator all around the horizon versus the formula you get from applying the entropy and see if they are almost equal.
So what you're saying is that maybe instead of just an arbitrary spin network state, I should be looking at either a specific, like a weave state or something like a coherent state that's supposed to represent that particular geometry. I think that would be interesting. I don't know what kind of states
that people have constructed to represent black holes, other than something like a weave state, which is just a specific case of a spin network, right? Which is sort of so.
The view that you presented just all be different baskets, basically the same right now. I mean, they seem very different, but fundamentally they're somewhat different.
It's possible.
Discounting microstates of your black hole is similar to what you're doing, right?
In a sense, the result that the entanglement entropy and the transcendence theory agree show that maybe these aren't so different. So entanglement entropy can be the same as, in fact, there's sort of general grounds to expect it to be the same as the dimension of one of these lower dimensional spaces. And So I know that people have tried to apply this entanglement point of view to string theory, but I don't know what the results are. I guess that's not the case here, because then your formulas still don't add up to that.
Yeah, right.
So I guess, what is the classical? You can't.
Right. So, unfortunately, different people have made different choices here, and it's not exactly clear what it should be. Because really, I mean, the only way that you can have these two, so you could just look at some regime where these two things are proportional. And that would be if you assume that there are a very large number of punctures and that they just follow some distribution. So you could say, for example, I think that in my distribution, the spin half punctures are going to be by far the most dominant ones. And that's actually, people have done that. And you get a particular value for, well, that, so that allows you to fix this gamma, which is part of an immunity parameter, it's just a free parameter. So people have done that. They've also said, well, J should follow some more general distribution, or J equals 1 should dominate, is another possibility, which gives some, well, when you do that, there's an interesting numerical agreement for an interesting coincidence with the black hole quasi-normal modes. So, So one possibility would be just to assume some distribution, which does make sense. Or you could hope that this formula actually will hold regardless of what the distribution is. So maybe like the distribution of these spins in some region actually has some geometric significance, right? And so if your horizon has a different curvature, maybe the distribution will change. And so the idea of this would be to have something which was general, which would apply no matter what the distribution was. And would depend on that, whatever geometric quantity is represented by these spins. It's not immediately clear to me what that is.
The formula is a formula that for black holes, right? So it's not for general boundaries in space time. But it's a limiting. It should be a limiting formula if you believe the holographic principle for those boundaries. So maybe it's a maximum entropy for a region. But your formula would just give the entropy of that region some arbitrary state.
Yeah, so
probably that would be the way of doing it. Like, just look at somehow what the maximum, I don't know.
Right. So in the entanglement entropy point of view, you don't view, I mean, it's not necessary to think of the Beckett-Sinhagen entropy just as the maximal entropy of a region. You're not forced to make that to take that point of view. You can say the entropy, the entanglement entropy of any surface is, has this formula.
But if you do that, do you recover the right formula? That's what. If you say that we want the the maximum entropy in a region, we want the maximum entanglement entropy for a different region.
I see.
Is that equal to the Beckett-Sinhagen formula?
Right, so if you say fix the area and look at what the maximal entropy would be for that
yes.
area. Right, and it turns out that corresponds to the choice J equals 1/2, just because this scales faster than this does. The log is always less than this term, this is approximately J. And this grows up along J. Okay. So if you want to maximize entropy for a fixed area, you take the smallest possible space. So that's one of the motivations for choosing that particular distribution of space.
I don't know why you really need the idea of isolated horizon. You're calculating kind of general property of some generic closed surface.
Mm-hmm.
You then you can calculate the entanglement entropy just by the reduced from the reduced density dimensions.
That's right.
Why do you think isolated horizon? In isolated horizon, there is no inside. Because isolated horizon is kind of interior boundary of the space time.
That's right.
So, and if you don't have inside, then I don't know how you get entanglement entropy.
So I don't need the isolated horizon boundary condition. That was part of the point. Maybe I didn't make that clear, but what I'm saying is that you don't need to impose a particular choice of boundary conditions. You can compute the entropy anyway from this formula. The point is that the idea is even when you don't have an interior, you still construct a theory on the boundary. Right, so
personally, in Lupin gravity, the Swedenborgs don't puncture the.
That's right. They don't. They hit the horizon and they stop.
Yeah, they stop. And right. There's no interior. Then what do you mean by entanglement entropy of outside and inside?
In that case, so what I've said is that you could have a situation where you do have an interior. Right, you have a spin network that passes right through the boundary, and you can compute the entanglement entropy for that situation. You can also consider an equivalent situation where you just take away the inside of the black hole. You adjoin a trim Simons theory to the horizon, right, and you have your and instead of tracing out the inside, you trace out just the horizon. And what I'm saying is that those situations should give you the same entropy. So, in a sense, that this numeric, the fact that numerically these two calculations match should not be surprising. Is that any clearer?
Maybe if we have one last, we can take one last question. Can we get the last question?
But I was thinking, so do you, like, in Trim Simons theory, do you still have, like things, flexed, or whatever, things like that? Do you still have, it's on the surface, say, but do you use the same thing?
You can look at operators which are Wilson loops in that theory. Okay. So you can do similar stuff.
How far off is this picture, say, if you have a bunch of spin network and you say pick some point inside and expand it to the horizon and then everything gets lifts on the surface? I mean, but how close is this to the Trim Simons theory on the surface?
So is the Trim Simons theory just what you get when you take the spin network on the outside and sort of move all the nodes up to the boundary?
Right.
It's not. How would I? Right. So one example would be, suppose you could have some Wilson loop which is just disconnected on the inside. Right, and you can move it out to the boundary, for example.
So this can, and like inside, and outside, let me figure out, like, are we outside, are we inside? Like, it doesn't matter that much, but
right.
When you're talking about it, maybe we should
agree. Yeah, okay, well, let's say we're outside, okay. Let's say we're talking about black holes. And so we want to trace out we want to move everything from the inside all to the boundary of the black hole.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually not the same. And the reason is in Trim Simons theory, so in this particular theory, you have a certain set of points that puncture your horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a Wilson loop that doesn't go around any of those points, then the Polanyi is trivial. So if you take just a curve that doesn't surround any of those singularities, then the Wilson loop operator doesn't measure anything. They're all zero, I guess. Yeah.
So so you have punctures on the surface, like on the part of the surface of this network?
Yeah.